So good morning. Thank you for coming. Thank you for braving all the different things that could have kept you away from here, not to mention the parade that's right outside. So today I just want to talk about some work that I did as I was leaving University of Michigan and just joined the faculty at Vanderbilt about African American men's perceptions of the role of their wives in their eating. No relationships to disclose. So I just want to start by saying that gender differences in eating behavior is pretty well documented, and we know that men tend to have less healthy diets than women pretty much across the board, whether you're thinking about fat intake, whether you're talking about fruit and vegetable consumption or other aspects of diet. And we know that particularly in African-American households, men tend to be pretty traditional sort of gender roles when it comes to food and food preparation and so forth. And several but not all studies actually have found that men who are married tend to have healthier diets than unmarried men. So we know that there's a benefit to marriage, and actually men tend to live longer who are married than those who are unmarried, despite the rates of divorce in this country and so forth. We're not going to get into that. But one of the things that's interesting is that wives often assume some responsibility or a considerable amount of responsibility for men's eating and overall health when they become partners, and that those factors, and both parties tend to be actually pretty invested in fulfilling those different roles. And it's often seen as a form and a sign of nurturing that women are very involved in men's eating and lives and just overall health. And it's something that both of them tend to value. For African American men, one of the interesting things that we've is actually a previous study by Dolores James at University of Florida, who did some focus groups with African American men and women and found that while women tended to equate health with both eating and physical activity, men tended not to really define being healthy or engaging in healthy behavior having anything to do with their eating. It was just about their exercise and whether or not they exercised or could do things like go to work and so forth. So all of this is essentially a backstory to us trying to figure out what to do in terms of interventions to help men eat healthier, since those are major risk factors. Unhealthy eating is, of course, major risk factors for a lot of chronic diseases. So this slide is simply only to highlight that this is not a new problem. So it's the world's first book club. It just says, I just found it implausible that Eve character got Adam to eat the apple. I'd never get my husband to eat fruit. Connecting this, so just to give a little bit of theoretical background to this, interdependence theory is actually something, quite honestly, we stumbled on in the process of this paper and trying to make sense of the findings that we had. And essentially, interdependence theory suggests that sometimes relationship objectives and actually maintaining a healthy relationship and reducing the amount of discord in a relationship can actually influence people's behavior and decisions in relation to health as well as just more generally. And that a lot of times people will consider how the decisions that they're making, in this case in terms of eating, can influence their partners and their relationships. And so foreshadowing what I'm going to talk about in the results, those kind of pro-relationship objectives can actually supersede personal preferences. And so men may eat things, in this case, that may be healthier but less tasty or not exactly what they wanted, but they'll do it in their words. Now, I have to give this caveat a couple times. This is only men's perspectives of the roles of their wives. So we are not at all trying to compare or say that this would be the same thing if we actually, do have a focus group data from wives about the role of their roles in men's eating. This paper was long and rich enough that we ended up separating those two. But I just want to make this clear. This is men's perspectives on the role of their wives. Now, for research on interdependence theory, actually, there's very little about one party's perspective on that, and certainly in relation to eating and those kinds of health behaviors. And there's just generally limited research on the factors that influence African-American men's eating, and particularly the role of their wives in their eating. So our question was simply, for middle-aged and older African-American men, how do they describe the influence of their wives or girlfriends, hopefully not and, influence how and what they eat? We did a total of 9 focus groups in Detroit, Flint, and Ypsilanti, Michigan. Did the majority of them in Flint, which is where the main project was based. We did 5 in Flint and 2 each in Ypsilanti and Detroit. There were really no differences, so I'm not going to talk much about the 3 cities or talk about them separately. We did them, as you can see, between July of 2008 and February 2010, semi-structured interview guide, pretty standard. Our incentives were a dinner or basically a George Foreman grill. I'm sorry, $20 gift card and a George Foreman grill, or a George Foreman grill. The men, so part of the reason this gets framed in terms of marriage and in terms of wives and so forth is because you do have 63% of the men who are married and another almost 20 that had a girlfriend, and about half of those who had girlfriends but weren't married, the girlfriends lived in the home with them. So it just is easier for us to not keep saying wives and girlfriends and all that kind of stuff. So that's why you see the language wives throughout the rest of the paper. All of them were self-reported as being African-American men, and about a third of them, or a little less, had children in the home. Very few met the criteria for, or even a very low bar of health, of fruit and vegetable consumption of the 5 a day. I know there have been newer recommendations of it actually being considerably higher, 9, and at one point I think it was 9 to 13 for men in terms of fruit and vegetable consumption. About 30% were obese by the clinical definition, and about 60% had some kind of chronic condition. So I'm not going to necessarily go through a lot in terms of our data analysis. Certainly, you can ask me any questions about that as you like. But it was basically the way that we did our coding is that it's more looking at the phenomena that we were trying to actually capture. And one of the unique things I'll say, and there are strengths and limitations to this approach, is we only utilize quotes that could be understood outside of the context of the original focus group. And I know for anthropologists that's like a critical sin, but you know, it was something that the way that we did our analysis, that does have implications for how we understand this. So I do want to make that sort of caveat. So the first finding was basically just about this notion of marital food roles, sort of what were they and so forth. And not going to necessarily read all the quotes and so forth, but the second part of this, I don't want to mess with dinner because she might do it a different way. So there's a lot of this in men talking about the roles of their wives, they very much defer to them in terms of food preparation, food purchasing and so forth, and how that actually influenced sort of what they ate at home and how they ate at home and so forth. Now I can say, we did look briefly at the focus groups with women who had a significant role in the daily lives of men. So we didn't actually ask them, we didn't pair them, or we didn't ask the wives of the men who participated in the focus group. But when we did ask wives, women separately, and when I've just sort of anecdotally talked about this paper, I've gotten quite a bit of confirmation that from the wives' perspective, this is actually a good thing. So they tended not to be too happy. This is the best, most politically correct way I can say that. So they tended not to be terribly happy when their husbands or partners decided that they actually wanted to have a lot more say, or, you know, depending on how that actually worked. You know, the fact that they were doing something that was actually, again, for the broader relationship, but, you know, it was something that was obviously a burden because a lot of them were working and doing a lot of stuff too. So if you're going to sit up here and criticize what I'm doing for you and for us, that tends not to go over terribly well. And so that was just something that they did recognize and that did actually influence the types of things that they ate. So just the other recognition, and the reason we sort of highlighted this is that women are a major influence in men's eating is, again, a lot of our work is trying to understand what we need to do to intervene to help men eat healthier. And a lot of models for interventions would suggest that basically you just need to train an individual to eat healthier on their own. And the short version of what we're finding in terms of the implications of this is maybe it means that in the context of men's eating in particular, and I think this will be very different for women, that you need to actually figure out how you're going to engage women in men's lives to actually help men eat healthier, because they are very interdependent on women, and particularly when it comes to eating at home. So particularly, the other thing that was interesting, just as sort of a bit of an aside in the context of the focus groups, is when we asked men about their eating, the only thing we had to actually prompt them to talk about anything other than dinner. So when that's the other sort of conversation as it relates to people doing this work. Otherwise, when you ask, you have to sort of understand what the associations are between what you're defining, because we meant, you know, breakfast, lunch, snacks, whatever, other types of things that you consume, and they took it as, no, what's in front of me when I sit down for dinner? And so a lot of the times their wives had the most influence over that meal, and there's a lot of other times when men actually didn't have that same sort of relationship with their wives actually having a lot of influence, like breakfast, because most of them didn't eat breakfast. A lot of times for lunch, they would sort of, we have another paper, the quote sort of before the colon is, I just grab what I can get. And it was basically men talking about, you know, for basically meals other than dinner, they tend to just grab whatever's convenient, available, will keep them full long enough to be able to then come home and actually enjoy a home-cooked meal usually. So wives, they also recognized and appreciated that their wives tended to actually provide healthier food than what they would do either on their own. So a lot of times the wives would cook throughout the week and on Sunday, but Saturday tended to be the day that men were left to either cook themselves or fend for themselves, which tended not to be terribly good for their overall diets. I can certainly say that with pretty good confidence. They tended to, this was the day that they sort of splurged and actually would go out with their wives, which, just transition to that. So when they would actually eat out with their wives, and the times that men actually did have some role in decision making was actually when they would say go out on a Saturday night to eat dinner. The wives tend not to really have say a whole lot about what they ate, what they chose, and so forth, and didn't really tend to worry so much about, and there weren't certain these open discussions about what they were eating, portion size, and all that kind of stuff. They would sort of just let them have free rein to eat, for the most part, what they wanted. I'm sure there was some influence in terms of not unspoken things, but in terms of actually what was stated and articulated, those tended not to happen very often. So a lot of times, again, one of the things that was most striking about this was that even though men tended to eat generally unhealthy in a lot of different ways, they tended to, one of the things that they liked the least, I should say, start there, is when there were substitutions in what they ate. So given the number of men, the 60% who had some kind of chronic illness, a lot of them, one of the recommendations, of course, was to eat healthier in a variety of ways. And their wives were certainly well aware of that and would make modifications to their dinners, let's say. And what they didn't like were sort of the food substitutions. So if they typically made spaghetti with a meat sauce, and that typically sort of in their history and relationship had been, say, made with beef, they didn't like the surprise and sitting down and expecting to taste beef when they pick up the fork and they taste turkey or they taste ground chicken or something like that. And it was just more the fact that there were not open discussions about these kind of things. I think if they were prepared for that, they tended to be a little more amenable to it. But the part of the notion here was that there weren't open conversations, discussions, in what kind of food changes needed to be made and how those things were going to happen. And they tended to say, essentially, that they didn't mind, you know, these kinds of changes or making modifications to their diet, but there were certain things that they really liked and often valued how their wives prepared different things. And it was losing some of that value, essentially, if you will, by making these modifications to the things that they really enjoyed about their wives. Because a lot of them were really proud of the fact that their wives cooked well and so forth and actually cooked for them. So. And really looked out for trying to actually prepare things that they actually liked. So all of those things were influencing what men ate, particularly at home, and how they saw their wives really influencing that. So again, some of the times that they actually had some role in making decisions, or some more explicit role, I should say, in making decisions were, again, when they were eating out together, when there were changes that needed to be made for children, or for, usually it was children in the home, or to just say, you know, sometimes they would just say, okay, look, I really want a blah, a steak, a burger, or whatever, so can you do that? And that was sort of the only time they would have these open conversations or discussions, but for the most part, they really weren't these explicit conversations. So, in summary, men were okay with the leadership role that wives played in their eating and their basically food preparation, food roles essentially at home. And one of the biggest challenges was that wives didn't necessarily explicitly engage men in their efforts to improve their diet. So they would just make the changes and not really talk to them explicitly about those kind of things. Men disliked the changes when they, again, were surprised by these sort of changes, or they were things that they almost would rather have a completely different meal than a modification to a meal that they sort of had grown up with and really liked and so forth. But they yet prioritize marital harmony over expressing that displeasure explicitly. So they would eat it, then they would go grab whatever. You know, they'd say, okay, I'm going out for whatever. I need to grab something. And they would go grab a burger on top of whatever it was they just ate or something like that to fulfill that sort of the taste part of what they were sort of looking for. And they certainly perceived more freedom to make decisions about what they were eating outside of the home. So again, one of the implications is simply that it may be more important in terms of men's eating and promoting men's healthier eating for us to consider that men's eating is far more interdependent in their relationships with women, whether it was wives, girlfriends, daughters, but they're often for men, I should say, not usually, some significant woman in their life who has some influence on what they eat if they're sort of near family and so forth. And men can, to help men make healthier choices in those other meals when they're away from home is another sort of potential point of intervention. And to find effective ways that are respectful to both of incorporating spouses in men's healthier eating. So, thank you. Do we have time for questions, or how do you want to do this?
I was wondering if it came up in any of your focus groups that the men suggested that maybe they could cook one night a week, which I think might be for the wives, and maybe a way for them to kind of incorporate healthier options into like dinner time. I was just wondering if that, if they self-generated like maybe that idea.
Absolutely not. So a lot of them, they were very explicit that they could cook, they knew how to cook, and actually prided themselves a lot of times on being good cooks. But, you know, again, they got a good deal here, and they're really not trying to mess it up. So, and they'll say essentially that, you know, that they really are trying to avoid cooking, frankly. One, I think they see their wives do it better, and they don't want to have that responsibility of figuring out how to prepare stuff. And when they do cook, it usually was not a full meal. So they would prepare like whatever protein, but it wasn't like I'm going to put together the whole meal. I'm not going to figure out what a starch and what vegetables and all that kind of stuff. I got the meat. That's all I got. That's all I can do for you. And so that was sort of the essence of it. So no, that part really didn't come up because I think it's sort of counter to the way that they were approaching this whole conversation. Now, I will honestly say that this might have been different had we done interviews as opposed to focus groups and actually asked those kinds of questions, but I think there's honestly the possibility that there's some of the group sort of norm expectation, the sort of gender roles that were playing out in the context of the group, so there may be things that weren't said that men might say more privately if we were doing individual interviews. Sure.
One is that this idea, I think, of masculinity and like party foods or unhealthy foods, or like you keep mentioning meat, I think it seems reasonable that that connects a lot to people as like a really poor,
absolutely,
poor part of the diet. So I think it would be interesting to kind of explore like how those two things are really interplaying.
Sure. Well, the second part, I can say that one of the biggest challenges we've had in actually figuring out what to do as it relates to interventions in this area is all of this, given the sample was, you know, it was much more of a convenient sample, and we found, you know, that so many of them were partnered or were married and so forth, that did we want to make that part of the criteria for participating in the intervention? Did we need to basically replicate this in men who didn't have, who met a criteria that basically said they didn't have a woman who was actively in their lives and so forth, didn't influence their daily eating, cooking, and all that kind of stuff? So we need to definitely better understand men who aren't partnered and certainly have same-sex partners and so forth, and how these things play out, and how are they similar, are they different, and all that kind of stuff before we'd actually intervene in these areas.